This is CICK News. As I approached CICK's train car on Wednesday of this week, an otherworldly sound emanated from the lounge car. I walk in and see a group of children are sitting anywhere they can find, each with a synthesizer on their lap, playing only the white keys for an ambient jam led by professional musicians Maddie J and Josh Spack from LA, along with Telco Elementary's music teacher Brennan Anderson. Maddie J is a producer, artist, and multi-instrumentalist based in Los Angeles. Originally from Smithers, BC, she's toured with notable artists such as Remy Wolf, Lord, and Summer Walker, and has contributed to Grammy Award-winning albums. Maddie and Josh are teaching something called Synth School, which is teaching children to teach anyone else in the Valley how to play synthesizer for the fall's newest and bloopiest club out of Telco Elementary. This is music teacher Brennan Anderson as I was speaking to him outside of Synth School while they were on a break.
Okay, so we are having a synth club next year at Telco Elementary School for the whole community of Smithers and Telco and Hazleton and Houston to come. And so right now we're training some mentors, some children, to come in and really learn how to use some of the synthesizers that we have collected at Telco Elementary School over the course of the last 4 years. And they're using these Yamaha CSs. And they're going to learn from Maddie J, who's based out of Los Angeles, and her partner Josh. And the beautiful thing about these synthesizers and what they're really trying to teach us is how to make all of the sounds of an orchestra and all of the sounds of space and the universe and different insects. And we've been having challenges like, you know, can we make the sound of a duck? Or can we make the sound of a siren? Or can we make the sound of a low rumble of a diesel truck?
Brennan plans to snag some synth time for the club when Maddie comes back to visit her family in Smithers. But Synth Club will move ahead after this 2-day crash course with the mentors that will practice over the summer and then become the teachers themselves.
Right now, I've just heard from lots of the parents and they seem to be pretty excited and their kids are pretty excited. It's pretty empowering to have a tiny little machine in front of you and you can make any sound and be creative immediately and... Yeah. They're very alluring synthesizers.
So then I guess after this synth school, like this first kind of iteration of synth school, everything moves to Telco Elementary. People can rent them out. Like how will people kind of keep being able to play with these and learn from them?
Yeah, so the mentors will be able to take home these Yamaha synths to their houses for the duration of the summer. And then in September we'll meet again. And the idea is... one or two Wednesdays a month, we'll invite the whole community out to Telco, you know, in the evenings. I do use lots of the synths in my teaching at Telco Elementary, but we have so many that it's about time that we shared it with the rest of the community and just showed people that they're real instruments. I think there's also a perception that people just press play and then nod their heads and, you know, you could play a reverb pedal and it's equally as technical as playing a cello. It's just about the musicality that you bring to anything in front of you.
Always the teacher, Brennan's ethos is to bring fun and enthusiasm to synthesizers the same way that the Valley has embraced fiddles and guitars. Decades-long camps and groups have been teaching the next generation, and he thinks that it's time to bring synthesizers into the mix.
The purpose of this is to open people's minds in our community that, you know, synths are real too, and that they're equally as technical, if not more so. You know, it takes a lot of computer brain to figure these things out, and so it's just like anything else, whether you're using your voice or a banjo, it's all the same. And yeah, just kind of opening people's minds and giving them the opportunity to actually press some buttons and to feel it.
What is the age range of these mentors here?
My son is in going into grade four, so he's 9 years old, and then we have a grade 12er as well. So yeah. And if adults want to become mentors, they can too. It's going to be a paid position. You know, the Arts Council has funded it. And yeah, we've gotten other grants for synths to be taken home. So yeah, the whole community is kind of backing it up, which is awesome. You can be 100 years old or I'd say 5 years old. Five to 100.
Okay. Good rate. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello, I'm Maddie J.
Okay. And so we're here at... the second day of synth school at CICK. So I guess kind of let me know what you feel like you're, yeah, I guess trying to express to the people here in very big age range too, of like 9 to like 17 or something.
I think with the synths, there are, it's a creative medium that you can approach from many different angles and from many different ages. It's very creative and anybody can get a cool sound. You don't really have to know what you're doing or understand why the sound is coming out of it. And if you want to get really in depth and understand the technical stuff, there's so many ways to do that and it becomes quite interesting. But you can also just play and jam and have fun with each other.
What was your first synthesizer?
My first synthesizer was a Micro Korg that Robin now has, my older sibling. And that's a really common first synthesizer because it's quite affordable, quite versatile and iconic, used on a lot of different records.
Is there anything different about teaching someone synthesizer or introducing them to synthesizer versus something like the guitar or voice?
I think that most, it's a lot less like technique focused than when you're learning to sing or play guitar or play the violin. You really have to learn how to like hold it. Before you can make any real music, you have to learn how to, you know, get the sound out correctly. But the synth, you can just get right into the creativity parts of things.
This being your hometown, what do you kind of see being the ripple effect of getting young people excited about something like synthesizers or just the idea of controlling that sound, but also being free and jamming?
Well, you saying that kind of takes me back to when I was living here and there was a huge fiddle community that I grew up in. And even though that's kind of like specific and not necessarily like you wouldn't think that a bunch of kids would get really into playing the violin, but because there's a community around it and because there's other people talking about it, it's just something to connect on. So I think that like the ripple effect of like having a bunch of people sort of invest in a very specific thing, it enriches like the social aspects of a community, and that sort of starts to bring new ideas and new energy into the creative community. And it's sort of built on the scaffolding of like the concept of this is a synth club, but the amount of different genres that use synths are very vast. So a lot of opportunities to bring in new ideas and new genres.
Okay, well, this is probably close to the end of the break here, so I guess let's get back in there.
Okay, let's go play some synths.
Yeah.
Do you
want to do that real quick?
Yeah, I can show you. Well, yeah, you can play it.
That's it. That's a backbeat.
And I'll put the metronome on, you can play along. Oop.
Janet Edith Walford was born in Halifax, Nova Scotia, in 1949 on March 6th. The biting Atlantic wind and colorful East coastline created a dichotomy in this little person's life. It showed her how to be strong against the elements, the ocean wind and salt that chaps cheeks and lips. Yet Easterners are known for their effervescence and welcoming characteristics, a hard land that softens exterior posturing, sanding down rough edges over time, leaving soft-hearted people with easy smiles and staunch opinions. Janet lived in Nova Scotia until she was 10 years old, when her family headed as far west as you can get from Halifax and moved to Prince Rupert. Growing up on one hand along a craggy, crescent-shaped seaboard cradling the Gulf of the St. Lawrence, defined by glacier-carved cliffs, dense pine forests, and unique marine phenomena like the Bay of Fundy, and moving to the more compact, mountainous, coastal rainforest landscape that characterizes northwestern Canada by its rocky islands, steep fjords, and kelp forest ecosystems, created this prism of east meets west, which was inherent to Janet's charm. The East Coaster in her said no one meant it, didn't care what the fashionable opinion of the day was. She held her ground, which meant you knew where you stood with her. Yet most everyone knew that she stoked a fire of warm hearth for the huddled and weary travelers of the world, making sure all who entered Mountain Eagle Books were greeted with kindness and understanding. Mountain Eagle Books was a place for ideas about philosophy, travel, science, religion, or if you were looking for an escape. The stacks were packed with these ideas, and kitchen tables sat at the front of the shop where sturdy, well-worn chairs sat askew and open, ready for anyone who needed a break. If you needed time to talk, Janet had it for you. Janet met her husband David at a winter retreat at the Sorrento Center in the Shuswap. Founded in 1963 by the Anglican Church, it was a place to share values. Janet and David moved to Vancouver, where he attended the Vancouver School of Theology, and they moved up north to a number of towns, hamlets, and villages along Highway 16. This young family landed in Smithers on October 24th, 1987, and has been here ever since. David and Janet opened up Mountain Eagle Books on April 1st, 1988. It was called Boots Used Books and established itself and the owners as integral cultural connectors. Four locations later, Mountain Eagle Books landed at the corner of Main Street and 3rd Ave in Smithers, where it has remained for the past 25 years. Anyone could walk into Mountain Eagle Books, and there Janet would be, perched on her stool behind the counter or in the kitchen stirring soup. She'd tell you that she'd be right there, and she was never in a rush. It allowed you to stop rushing as well, and just take a moment. Smell the old books and chai, listen to a Mark Perry song, sit and talk a while. Janet Walford passed away on July 6th, 2026, the day after her beloved folk festival weekend. She hugged so many people that weekend. Many of us got a smile and a wave from across the crowd. Some of us sat and chatted. Her death has left a massive impact on the community of Smithers, from the music lovers and artists to pride volunteers and arts councils, friends, people looking for a comfortable place to sit without needing to spend money. So in a word, family.
Hi, my name's Shola Phoenix. I am Janet Walford's daughter.
So we're speaking here in your shop. It seems like this has been like whirlwind of days. What are you kind of feeling is the community response right now?
Enormous. It's an enormous response. She was... To say she was well-loved would be remiss. She embodied love to the entire community. She was like mother to the entire community. And she really was the mountain of Mountain Eagle. She became like the resting place of and the reprieve from the crazy world for so many people.
Mountain Eagle has been here in downtown Smithers for 35 and a half years. One of the wonders of Mountain Eagle is that it's attracted the various factions in the arts community. That made it an interesting place for people to stop by and have good chats and just hang out and meet other good people.
When I stopped in today to the shop, it's, David described it not as a store, but as a community hub. Do you feel like that's a reflection of specifically your mom or also just that the space was so welcoming?
It's like I've often described Mountain Eagle Books and thus my mom's role in the community as like the cultural cog in the wheel. And so now it's where people are now gravitating towards to feel the connection of community, to feel the love and embrace of what she really brought to us all that we can share together as we recognize her passing and recognize her role of like fostering love, kindness, and vibrant like celebration of arts and music in the community.
I saw that lovely video where friends and family were with her in the hospital singing to her as well too. Yeah. And that's really special to see and to be invited into a moment like that. Mm-hmm. Too. Why is your family so committed to sharing these times that are typically might be private and people don't feel like they want to share that?
Well, partially, I mean, we're all extroverts.
You don't say. The answer is going.
also, I mean, my mom wanted people there. She couldn't speak at the time. We could see on her vitals that she calmed right down. Like, her heart rate came down to, like, a more reasonable rate, and her breathing rate relaxed as soon as people started to arrive and to, like, sing to her. Mm-hmm. She knew it was time. She knew she was going. You know, we were told before we even got in the room that she had suffered a massive stroke and that she would not recover from this, and today would be her last day. It was such a beautiful sharing in, like, that moment. And she shared her whole life with the community every day. It was really more important that she share things than she keep things super close to her chest, you know? Yeah, and yes, some people ask for privacy, but, like, there's no need. We don't want to be alone. She didn't want to be alone. That store kept her alive. And we as a community celebrate her, and we got the chance to do that in a really sweet little way.
How can the community honor her now?
Ooh, so interesting. Such an interesting question. Well, we don't quite know what Mountain Eagle Books is going to become. She's had it for sale for a decade, and she really was the only one capable of being the sole proprietor at the helm of such an amazingly beautiful, welcoming space. But she, you know, like, she's no longer with us to do that. And I think a way in which to honor her is if a collective of people wanted to come together to continue on her legacy, to run Mountain Eagle Books as maybe a collective, if it's something they're interested in, and we can see how that might evolve and be another blossoming into something new, and yet to honor and carry on the what my dad calls the ethos of my mom. Mm-hmm.
In late summer this year, there will be a celebration of life for Janet, or as Shola called it,
it's probably going to be a Janet Walford Memorial Festival.
Plans are still up in the air, but news on that festival will be shared far and wide in the community closer to the date. In the meantime, however, Shola shared with me that if people want to share a picture of Janet, they can bring a physical picture into Mountain Eagle Books to include on a memorial wall that the family is building. Janet's memory lives on in Smithers. Immovable as a mountain, share a story of Janet with those around you and be kind to each other, the way she was. Former Smithers mayor and MP for Bulkley Valley Stikine, Taylor Bachrach, wrote a lovely post about Janet, which spurred me to sit in his kitchen and talk about her for a little while yesterday afternoon. Taylor told me after the interview that when he and his family moved here, people told him that they had to go to Mountain Eagle Books, meet Janet, and learn what this community is really all about.
You know, this is different for everyone. Obviously, for her family and people really close to her, it's like that intense personal grief of losing a loved one. But there's another layer beyond that, which is sort of a community grief. And I've just been reflecting on the quiet role that she played as the glue of the community, that I think in many ways is invisible to a lot of people. But you sure miss it when it's gone. Yeah. Like I've often said that about Mountain Eagle. It's like, you know, 10% business, 90% social service. Mm-hmm. I was always struck by her authenticity. You know, she was such a lovely soul. She's not someone I would describe as like stereotypically nice. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
She was so authentic,
yeah,
and so real,
yeah,
that she just gave you sort of her unvarnished whole self.
Yep.
You know, I was in politics for 14 years here. Mm-hmm. She never once told me how she voted or whether or not she supported me. She left me to guess about that part. But that was something she took really seriously, was kind of nonpartisanship, standing for ideas, supporting people, supporting community. But she held her voting preferences close to her vest, which was unique and lovely. You know, she obviously outwardly led a very humble life, but I think her generosity for people who were struggling was pretty limitless. And so I'm hearing different stories from different folks, but mostly as I go around the community, I notice there are so many people who want to talk about it and are just feeling the depth of the loss for the community. Yeah. And so, you know, in a way it's, I think sometimes when you lose someone like that, it can help, it can reflect back on, you know, what community is and make you think differently about the people around you that are still with you, right?
Yeah.
Be more appreciative of just the specialness of what we have.
Thank you to Taylor, and thank you to Shola for taking the time to speak with me yesterday about the life and work of Janet Edith Walford. CSK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.